Blog Talk Radio.
These various rappers are so hilarious. We'll put the mic down, but you ain't qualified to carry this. Your tracks are garbage, your bars are miscellaneous. So throwing your joint at my car was spontaneous. Oh shit, I got you feeling nervous on purpose. I love bringing that shit right at you, door to door service. Instantaneous, you would still get your shit bust. Only spontaneous.
All aboard the Spontaneous Express. Nevertheless, always the more. From the pool table to the kitchen floor. Next stop, the G-Spot. Luda!
Fantini.
Did you ever start to notice all the blood we shed before? Did you ever start to notice this crying earth is weeping too?
Spontaneous loves you. One love worldwide. Let's keep expanding.
And with another great opening mix by DJ Waheed, guess what, folks? We are live and up and running as Spontaneous Radio Online proudly brings to you this PLM special roundtable discussion, the future of Ukraine and the recent wars. Hashtag tonight for all of you, and it should be for all of us year-round. Love wins. This is LeVar Evans. I am honored. And I am glad, I can say for personal reasons and for any other reason, to be here with you again tonight.
Yes.
As all of you coast to coast and around the world are joining us, I want to thank my PLM family for all of their thoughts and prayers as I battled a little bit of some things, and I am glad to be back. This is back in the driver's seat, which is helpful for me.
So, we are extremely, extremely happy.
Yes.
You just
yes,
don't know yes. how serious we are on how happy we are to even have you with us right now. Definitely. Definitely.
So yeah. I am definitely glad to be here. Enough about me. We've got a lot to discuss tonight. For those that are here, this will definitely be eye-opening. And this will definitely be an interesting note because everything with the world and the way it is, things get pushed around, but we don't get a chance to truly hear about what is happening in the world. And I hope tonight after our guests that your eyes are open a lot more to what is going on in the world, and hopefully all of us together can make changes. So the boss, Spontaneous, is here. And also here. Along with me on this ride is my PLM brother, DJ FX. Sir, how are you this evening?
I am good. And going back to what you just mentioned before, we're definitely glad that you're here as well. You know, because I know a lot of ailments that's going on, especially with the weather that has been changing, because I must admit that I'm battling a little bit of a cold myself. But as we all do, we all push through it. You know, we persevere the best way we can. And, you know, all those that have definitely persevered to join us tonight, you know, we definitely want to thank you. And first and foremost, before we get into what we're going to get into tonight, definitely want to thank our beautiful PLM boss for bringing this together. You know, a lot of ways she sees the vision and she's, you know, the conversations that we always have, especially the one we definitely had last night, you know, the state of things that's been going on. And, you know, we just, you know, just really think about, again, and we mentioned it before, we're definitely going to talk about it again. With just the state of the world and just the thoughts and the feelings of, you know, of what people go through and just really analyzing that, you know, just really sitting down and really analyzing. So again, definitely after the first, you know, first and foremost, got to thank PLM boss Ms. Spontaneous for bringing this together. And as you know, she is the female artist who was managed by Tupac Shakur. She is also a three-time Hall of Fame inductee, sold over 352 million of movies and still selling today. She has also received 9 awards of her accomplishments in the entertainment industry, including a Lifetime Achievement Award. Also, our beautiful boss became the valedictorian of her class of 2020 from Full Sail University, and she will become Dr. Spontaneous. That's right, Dr. Spontaneous of Business Administration and Strategic Marketing in December of 2024, including a second book that will be released about her life with her manager Tupac Shakur, authored by Kevin Powell. Also, New York Times best-selling author Jeff Perlman will be releasing a Tupac Shakur biography as well. But wait a minute, there's another book coming by Mopreme Shakur. That's right. We got another book coming by Mopreme Shakur. He will also be releasing a biography of Tupac. So be on the lookout for that book as well. Miss Spontaneous, of course, will be mentioned in these biographies, so that way you can definitely track the relationship that her and Tupac have had. All right? These books will be released by the year 2025. Spontaneous Radio Online, the one-stop shop for all of our PLM shows and events, so please stay updated for all upcoming shows and interviews. Also, continue to email your ideas and questions to the radio show email at spontaneous spantanradio at gmail. That's spantanweusradio at gmail.com. Now, of course, our conversation cannot be complete because, again, Ms. Spontaneous brings all sorts of people to the table, internationally, of course. And you know who I'm talking about. We brought him back again. And here he is, all the way from Ukraine. All the way from Ukraine. He is from the Ukrainian paw, as in, you know, dog paws. Paw Rest. We bring him back one more time. He has been here last December. We brought him back again because he's going to definitely give us the updates of what's been going on in his neck of the woods. So I'm going to introduce to you one more time, Mr. Caesar Wishahi. What's going on, my man?
Catching a cold myself as well.
I know, right? So I guess we're all in that same boat. It's like, hey, we're fighting ailments, but you know what? We braved it. We're here, and we're going to give them the news. That's what we do.
Yes.
Good
and
to
we're
have
so
you,
happy. And we're so happy.
It's
you're
good
here
to hear from all y'all.
It's after 4 in the morning in Ukraine, correct?
Yes. It's about 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah. A.M.
Yeah.
Thank you. We thank you.
He's up right now.
The weather's still pretty crazy up here. It's snowing, icing. So, you know, trying to get used to that since I don't see any of this in Texas.
Right, right.
Well, we
sorry,
do.
My
you're fine.
You
you're
take
fine,
your
yeah.
time in every form of fashion, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a lot more fans who are listening tonight, globally as well. And I know you have mentioned the format, how you prepared yourself to leave and go to where you are now. Could you please explain that again to the world? Because we have a lot more listeners tonight, too, comparing to the last time you were on the show.
Yeah,
how did
so,
you prepare yourself? Yes.
Whew, that's a good question. Well, when the whole invasion happened, you know, I was just an executive chef at a little restaurant in the U.S. And, you know, I saw what was going on, and I was like, you know, I need to do something to help out as well, you know. So I made a plan. I thought it out. I didn't just jump the gun like a lot of people did when they came to Ukraine. I thought everything out. I was like, you know, I live by myself. I have a 3-bedroom house. So I ended up starting, you know, making my plans. Okay, I'm going to fly out in 2 months. Let me start getting myself situated. I started selling everything that I own in my house, and I was renting at the time. So little by little, I was selling things to raise money for myself, to raise money for what I needed to do. Got on Airbnb, rented an apartment in Ukraine. And then from there, bought my plane ticket, jumped on a plane, flew all the way to Warsaw, took a bus, got into Ukraine. And from there, you know, I made the decision to help out as much as I can. And I think the thing that motivated me to come was seeing what was happening to people, seeing what was happening to animals especially. And I think the big decision was, you know, we've been to a lot of different wars. How do I say it? I felt like it was time that American people gave back without expecting something back.
Right.
So that was my point of thought. I was like, you know what? We hear about other countries. We hear about what we do to, like, some countries and all that. But it's time that we gave back and not expect anything back. So, yeah, I came as a volunteer. I didn't sign up with anybody. Started my own thing. And, you know, things kicked off after that. And I've been here for a year and 9 months now.
Exactly.
Haven't really left.
You've been sitting here for a while.
Yeah. Go by.
When you and I speak once a month, I'm like, you're still there. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah, I hear about a lot of volunteers that leave every 2 months and then come back, and then they leave again. Mm-hmm. And there's people that actually stayed here as much as I have. And now, you know, basically we consider this our home now because we gave up everything back in the U.S. So pretty much this is my home now.
Right. Well, how do you see going into 2024 of situations right now, in your opinion?
In my opinion, well, so the best way to put it is, like, I'm a teacher now. And I talk with a lot of my students, like adult students, and ask them the same question. I was like, guys, so what do y'all see the predictions of next year for Ukraine? Mm-hmm. A lot of people have given up, like, oh, the war's still going to be going on. I don't see it ending within a year, 2 years. And my point of thought is, I don't see it ending anytime soon. I see that by next year, Ukraine's going to have to step it up a little bit more on their own because they're not really getting the help,
the support,
as much as it was in the beginning. Yes.
Right, I'm observing that too. I'm observing that as well.
Well, there's reasons why for that too. And then, you know, there's reasons on the U.S. side and there's reasons on the Ukrainian side. And from what I've been hearing, especially like, I have these conversations with my adult students. Even they've said themselves, you know, we don't see enough of the Ukrainian people doing their part as much as they did in the beginning.
Right.
They're just going back to their normal lives, doing what they want. You know, they're too relaxed now where they're going on vacation now. They're not even thinking about the war anymore, which, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's the thing is, like, that's going on, and the U.S. is dealing with its own issues now where we really can't be helping out another country when we're in a disaster little by little in the U.S. You know, what can the U.S. do? So they're seeing that too.
Cesar,
I'm kind of interested. I was going to say, in the time that you got almost 2 years ago. Was the reception from the people there in Ukraine to you being there? Has it changed for the better, or has it pretty much leveled off, or has it been some issues with people seeing, you know, an American come in, but yet things are still the same? How has the reception been from the people there in Ukraine with you being there?
Well, in the beginning, when I got here, like, everything was good. People were like, oh, you're American, all, you know, wanted to shake my hand. You know, they would sometimes, you know, go and buy me drinks, which I didn't care. But they welcomed me. And lately, you know, there's still good people here that, you know, welcome you, like, oh, thank you for what you're doing. And then there's the older generation, like the grandmas and grandpas, that don't like foreigners that are here unless you speak their language. I've been yelled at many times from older people, like, and usually someone translates for me. Oh, they're telling you, why are you living in Ukraine if you don't speak their language? And my response is, you know, this is me being a jerk. I was like, well, why aren't they doing something instead of begging for Americans to help out? So, you know, it's just one of those that goes back and forward.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, the younger people understand. They're still, you know, good about it. But like I feel like the mood has changed a lot.
In a good way, relaxing way, or bad way? I mean,
too relaxing. Too relaxing.
Wow.
They've got, this is why I don't go to the city center anymore. I just don't want to deal with the people anymore. So it's gotten to the point where no one thinks that there's a war going on, like in that kind of a mood set. They know it's happening. They just don't acknowledge that they should do more, or they should be doing something, do things better. I don't know if you understand
wow.
that point of view.
Yeah, I was just wondering, it sounds like to me, did they just get desensitized to it? Because that's what it sounds like to me. Like, I guess they figured,
yeah.
you know, with the war going on, and I guess, you know, anything has been happening thus far, I guess they figured, well, we don't see an end to it. We're just getting used to it. Whatever happens, happens. So we're just
going to,
you know, go with it. Okay. And in that aspect, has Zelensky given up any updates? On, you know, anything that has changed? Has there been maybe a possible negotiation between him and Putin? Has anything like that been mentioned or no?
Not too much. Well, usually any news that we get here, it's officially all in Ukrainian. So it's kind of hard for me to understand what's – so usually I ask my students, like, so what did Zelensky say? And that's the thing is, a lot of my students – and.
Right.
Everybody that I've ever asked, I've asked the same question. Do you think you get 100% truth whenever he comes on and talks about what's going on?
Right.
Everyone has told me no.
Right.
We feel like he's hiding a lot of stuff from us.
Right.
We feel like he's not telling us the truth. And the crazy thing is, like, a lot of my students even tell me, we just don't like Zelensky anymore. Why? Because he's not telling us what's the truth. He's lying to us a lot. And the thing is, like, I can't really judge that because I don't know the full aspect of the situation of what he's saying. So I'm just going off of what they're telling me.
Sometimes leadership might do that because they don't want to have the people worry more than what they are worried.
Yes.
But then sometimes you want to give them the reality, but people guards are going down a little bit. He's trying to maybe have people go back, but he knows there's still major danger, but he wants to still get back to the way things were, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those back and forth
situations. It's like what I tell people is, like, if the government were to give us every truth about everything,
everybody will be running around.
We wouldn't be able to handle that kind of information.
Exactly. Even here.
If they tell us, hey, guess what? We actually do have aliens in whatever bunker. People won't be able to handle it. Look how they reacted to the Area 51 when they were trying to storm it.
Yeah.
People are not ready to hear the truth.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I don't blame for what he's doing. He's just trying to keep people's I forgot that word. Spirits up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because he sees that there's a light
for that
people
one.
Faces. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think with him and leadership who are doing great things for their country, they do that. Like you said, because we don't want everybody to be so paranoid, even though they're paranoid and their guard is up. But we see the comfortability, but we want them to be happy. But we don't want them let the worry be on him. The leader.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know? So I think
people have to understand that more. If they hear a lot of the truth, guess what? There's going to be looting here. There's going to be, you know, attacks.
Yeah.
People will just be doing whatever they want after that. He's keeping control for a reason. He's trying to keep the country out of control. So that's why, you know, people are not ready to hear the truth. People are not ready to hear about the corruption, not ready to hear about, you know, briberies that are happening. They're not. They know about it, but they don't need to hear about it too much, which sometimes it's a shame, but I understand why he does a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I truly understand that, too. And I respect him strongly because he never left his country like some other prime ministers did. He never left. So he, when that hit on February 24, 2022, he didn't leave. And he was offered to leave many times, as you know. He did not leave. He's like, I'm not leaving my country. I'm not leaving the people. So I admire
that. And that's the thing is, like, and that's the thing is that what people don't understand is, like, he never left, but a lot of men that left as cowards.
Mm-hmm.
For their country to fend for itself. He stayed behind.
He
stayed. To me, that shows a lot more of him than the men that left.
Yeah.
That's a real man.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to you real. That's what you call a man.
Yeah.
A real man. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't abandon his country or his people.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
but the rest
I,
of the people that left, that didn't, lose their homes, that had nothing to do with what was happening, left because they didn't want to go to the military. To me, that's a coward.
Yeah.
It's like you're fighting, you're trying to protect your loved ones and where you live. So it's like you want to run away from that. It's like, come on.
And I think you talked about some people desensitized to the whole thing, which can happen. And it happens here in the U.S. where some people get desensitized with what happens in the streets here. I guess my major question is that for you, you went there with a resolve to help. How do you keep that resolve in the wake of people either kind of giving up on the situation or being desensitized to it? How do you keep your resolve, and how do you keep your focus on why you're there?
Well, that's the thing is, like, with me, I've always enjoyed helping. Like, with me, I tend to focus more on animals than I do human beings now. Animals. This is the one thing that loves you more than anything. It's happy to see you when you come home. When you're upset, cat or dog, they comfort you. They comfort you more than a human being does. That's the thing is, that's what keeps me motivated is these poor animals can't really fend for themselves when they're getting shot at or artillery's coming in. People tend to run away from them when things like that happen. You know, they need help too. A human being has a much higher chance of getting rescued than an animal does. That's what pretty much what happened when the whole invasion happened was on the trains wouldn't allow pets on there. So people were abandoning their pets at the train station. They would just tie them up somewhere and just leave. And a lot of people told me that during the whole invasion, they found hundreds of animals in their crates tied up on their leash at the train station left behind. You know, that's just wrong.
That's horrible. Yeah. Extremely.
Yeah, that's
extremely. Wrong. And animals, pets, they don't know what's going on. They don't know, human being has created this disaster. These animals and pets do not know that. And it's really, you know, really sad. And, like, I understand what you're saying, Caesar, because the idea is with animals and pets, they don't change their format. Human beings, we look at great human beings, but we look at the crazy human beings. Animals don't do that unless you train them that way, being vicious.
Yes.
But, you know, so that's the reason. I've heard so many people say they love animals more than they love humans. And I understand that.
Yeah, I've heard
that. I truly
that
understand that situation. I truly understand that, you know, because it's just – and – I understand there are certain laws where you can't have your animals on, like you say, a train or something like that. And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm not leaving.
You
tell
walk.
Them, excuse me?
You walk.
Yeah.
And I noticed there were some, I noticed some people there were taking their animals, and like you just said, they were walking because CNN covered a lot of that, and they had their pets with them.
Yeah.
Some they had
lady,
their cats, their dogs.
During the whole, during the whole beginning, she carried her shepherd, an elderly shepherd. She carried her dog for miles.
I have her on my
just to get
page.
To the border.
I have her on
yeah,
my social
she
page.
Did all that.
Amazing. Amazing. Because animals is part of your family. That's like your babies.
Mm-hmm.
If you really love animals.
Exactly.
Some people have animals for the wrong reason.
That is true. That is true. like I have a dog here in Ukraine now, and
I know you did. Yeah.
I have a backpack ready for her with food and like anything that I need for her if we need to leave. And if I can't get on a train, guess what? We're gonna steal a car or we're gonna pay someone off to drive us to the border. We're getting to the border together. She is not being
That's
left
right.
behind.
Exactly. That's his baby. So he went to Ukraine and he adopted a child, which is a doggy. That's his baby.
Yeah. She's a handful, but that's my girl. And the thing is, if you think about it too, I live here in Ukraine alone with no family, don't even have friends. I depend on her now, and she depends on me. Thing is, if I didn't have her, who knows what I would be doing, how crazy I would be going, because I talk to my family, yes, I do, every week, but that's not enough for someone that's in a different country on their own when, you know,
right.
No girlfriend, no friend. I do have friends, but they're mostly just my neighbors. When we go walk our dogs, that's, you know, that's when we talk.
Right.
But technically, I'm just by myself, if you think about it. It's like, what am I supposed to do? So that's why she has helped me through a lot of stuff.
Right, right. Yeah. And they have, just like his situation, there are some people who've been in other countries and they end up adopting the dog or a cat or whatever, and they were able to bring their pet to the USA. So I know he's going to do that too as time goes on. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, with the people that abandon their pets, there's so many ways that they could have got their pets to the border.
Yeah.
There's so many people that are willing to help out. But their first thought was, just leave it.
Themselves.
They don't allow it.
Yeah.
And to me, those kind of people don't deserve to have pets anymore. Those people don't deserve to come back to the country. That's how I feel about them.
I understand. Because the animals rely on the humans. They can't, you know.
Yes.
I know those animals were wondering, like, what's going on? What's happening here?
Are they coming back?
And then, right. Because an animal will sit there and wait, thinking that the owner is going to come back. That's how much real love an animal has for their owner.
Animal shelter all the time in the U.S.
Yeah.
We see it at the animal shelters in the U.S. all the time, where someone just leaves their dog because they can't control it. We'll teach it.
Yeah, and all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They just don't want to take the time.
Yeah.
Just don't want to
take
the time.
Like, why you have right? And it's sad. It's like, okay, hopefully that pet will get another better person to take care of them as real family.
But I do want to ask you this though. Yeah, for because I know you're part of Ukrainian Paw Rescue. I definitely wanted you to actually explain, you know, the details and how you became a part of that. You know, how was it created? You know, those kind of things. You know, especially with, you know, you being an animal rescuer. You know, definitely give you know, our fans, you know, that those details. You know, of you know, Ukrainian Paw Rescue. Like, how did you come about with that?
Well, like I was saying, like I value animals more than anything. So that was something like when I came to Ukraine. It reminds me a lot of Mexico, big time. Mm. The way the buildings are built, the roads, like with the stones, the market, how people sell food on the streets. You know, in the U.S., you wouldn't be able to do a lot of that stuff. You wouldn't be able to sell food without permits. Here, that doesn't exist in a way.
Wow.
But, yeah, it reminds me a lot of Mexico, where dogs would be walking around the streets. I see them all the time in the city center where there's just stray dogs everywhere. So I always carry wet dog food with me to feed a dog if I see one.
Right.
It's normal for them, which I understand. It's normal for them. But luckily the city does do stuff to help out the dogs by picking them up, getting them neutered or spayed, whatever they need to, and they release them back out with a tag on their ear showing that they're fixed.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So they release them back on the street?
Yeah. They don't really have, like, they do have shelters, but the shelters are not built like the ones in the U.S. where they have kennels for each dog. These shelters are just range-free fields where they just let all the dogs roam around together, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any special cases for, like, pets that have some kind of like a disease or infection, they have special kennels for that. But majority of the time, it looks like somebody's farm field with hundreds of dogs.
Wow, interesting. Very interesting.
So, yeah, that's pretty much how you see a lot of the shelters here. Now, if you go to like the fancier shelters, yes, they do have special kennels, but like the ones that open up their fields to start rescuing animals, they're open range fields. They can't afford stuff like that, but they've opened up their land to rescue animals. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much how it looks like. But yeah, like, you know, that was my point. I thought, like, we need to do something for the animals. We need to do a lot more for the animals. We need to help all these abandoned animals. And like I was saying, it's like they don't have people for them when they're being left behind. So that was my point of thought, was to start something like that to help raise money, mm-hmm. to buy food, to give to these animal shelters that need it the most. I even helped deliver a lot of this animal food to the East with a couple of volunteers, mm-hmm. to deliver food and help villagers out that couldn't, mm-hmm. go to the market to get dog food. So that was a lot of the stuff that we were doing. Mm-hmm. And then from there, like I said, yeah, that was a reason for me, was to help get an organization going to help rescue animals. And like I said, I care more about the animals more than anything. If I had
and
to
you?
Choose to mm-hmm. save three people and a dog or four dogs, it would be the dogs, mm-hmm. that would come first.
I hear you. I hear you. But also, too, you being the owner of this rescue, I remember throughout your social pages, you were showing, you know, the locations and, you know, the trucks and, like you were saying, all the food that was being transported for the animals, and not just that, clothing for people and things of that nature, and try to keep the dogs and pets and everyone actually warm as possible during the winter time. So I remember throughout your social pages, you were having and showing all the greatness that you were doing there too. Yeah. Of last year.
And the problem is with, like, that was going so good, but a lot of the people that I was with, they all went back to the U.S. And it's understanding why they went back to the U.S. because me, I'm still here, but you know, they were running out of money. We weren't using any of the donations for ourselves. That was going 100% straight to buying supplies for animals. So every dollar we raised was going to that, compared to other organizations that are still here. They profit from all that. I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I ran out of money. Well, guess what? I had to get myself a job to mm-hmm. keep mm-hmm. my financials up to state and keep paying my bills and all that. So, yeah, I'm living like a real Ukrainian and still trying to help out wherever I can. But, you know, mm-hmm. like a lot of my friends, they went back to the U.S. because they ran out of money. We weren't mm-hmm. depending on the donations like a lot of organizations that are here in Ukraine do. If I wanted to, mm-hmm. I would be pushing my fundraiser, pushing that group harder by doing charities, by doing stuff. And guess what? I'll be able to be paying mm-hmm. for my own bills and travel whenever I wanted to go back to the U.S. and all that. But I can't now, because mm-hmm. the thing is, if you're going to start an organization, that has to go towards what you're trying to do instead of trying to pay for your rents with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course,
which I hear about and I see a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
mm-hmm. That's the thing.
Now,
it's like,
also,
I understand, you know.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, you go.
Well, like, I also understand that, you know, yes, for volunteer groups, there is, you know, mm-hmm. some audits of, you know, they have to use some of the money for gas, repairs on their trucks. Yes, I understand that. But it shouldn't mm-hmm. be going to pay for someone's rent, their drinking habits, their, you know, it shouldn't be going towards that. It should be going mm-hmm. to stuff that's going for the mission, going for the task. Mm-hmm. It should be going for that. But, like, mm-hmm. that's what I've noticed with a lot of organizations here. You know, they usually hire people to deliver the stuff for them. They have them mm-hmm. send them pictures while they stay back in the West and collect money. Like, okay, well, we'll give you this much to deliver this. We bought all this stuff here. And they're still living their good life by going to restaurants, going to bars, using that money for that, paying their rent. You know, that's a shame.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I do remember there was an organization quote, and when I was saying, oh, check that one out. And I say, dig in that company a little bit more. Because I didn't really see like an actual website and different things, but I was like, well, just go into it and see what's going on. And you did do that, and we found out that realistically they were not a foundation or rescue. Like you just said, they most likely were taking the funds for themselves. So, like I said, I was helping in any way I can here in the USA, not being there, but I'm like, okay, I'm helping foundations and rescue organizations in Ukraine. And that was one particular one, but it gave me like something strange here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's when I said for you to check into it more. And you and I corresponded. We're like, no, this is, you gave him some information, like, this is where you need to go, this, that, and the other. And you and I figured that out. Like, they were taking that money for themselves. They were posting up as if they were helping animals and pets, but really it wasn't that way. Yeah.
I remember that because I asked them if there's anything that I can do. I know some people that can deliver food to them. And they just kept on asking for money only. They're like, no, we need donations. Like, well, I can get you donations of food to you. I can get you this type of whatever dog food or cat food you need. Yeah. We can't
you
do money. Oh, well, we only accept money. I was like, well, that's how I knew. Do not donate to that kind of organization.
Exactly. I'm like, excuse me. I'm an American and you're an American. We know the bull. You understand?
Yeah.
We're like, hold up here. This is some bull. You got the wrong two people here, pal. You know? So that's why I was like, we cutting them out immediately, you know, because I know you were there. You can get more information. And it was like, no, this is a scam. And I'd rather for somebody to be real about it and say, you know what, I need money for myself to feed my family or this, that, and the other for us to get food. Don't use animals and use videos and pictures of other people stuff that's out there and you're acting like it's you, and it's not at all.
Yes, exactly.
So that irks me because they do that with me in photos.
That's the funny part that I asked all my students, like all my adult students, even the kids students. I was like, guys, if you were to be president, what would you change about Ukraine? And everyone gave me the same answer. I didn't give them like, you know, what do you think about? No, I said, what would you change? Everyone said the same thing, the corruption. And I was like, what do you mean corruption? I was like, the corruption. We know that our government is profiting, especially with all the money that's being sent to the U.S. All the high commanders are getting their bank accounts filled with money while the rest of us are suffering. So that's a lot of stuff that they were telling me. Like, here, the police, you know, you can easily bribe the police to get out of a ticket by giving them cash, or sometimes if they had to hit a certain quota, they'll ask you, well, we pulled you over for this. You can either give us this much or you can go to jail. So here they're like, it's corruption. If they wouldn't have had corruption here, things would be a lot better for them. And they're saying, this is why we have so many scams going on here in Ukraine. Even before the invasion, we already had this type of stuff going on. And now that countries are donating money to Ukraine, especially the U.S., where do you think a lot of that money is going? Corruption is the biggest thing here.
Yeah. Like I said, that leads to my next question for you, being on the ground there and seeing things there. Of course, I'm sure you are familiar with the status as being held up in Congress of further aid to the Ukraine. Congress is going back and forth with that, and it doesn't look to happen before the new year. As a person there, in your own opinion, do you feel that another $61 billion should be sent to Ukraine, or should it be less, or should it be something that comes with strings such as, hey, we will send this, but we need to know, you know, line by line where this money is going?
So my point of view on all this now, we should stop sending money. We should stop sending money 100% and only send weapons. No money. Reason behind that is like my boss told me, she's a teacher and her brother works in the intelligence parts of the military, where his job is to find out and find who are these people that are profiting when it comes to soldiers, commanders. They've actually arrested, from what she told me, they've actually arrested a lot of high commanders that were taking a lot of those donation monies and putting them into their bank accounts to get rich.
Oh, wow.
And that's his job, is to stop people like that.
Right.
Right.
And then from what she was telling me, she was saying, yeah, just so you know, also to, you know, all that money, it's going to pay for the soldier's salary. So basically all that money that's coming from the U.S., it's paying for the soldier's salary. Why isn't the why isn't the Ukrainian government doing that? Why should we be doing that?
Yeah.
But to me, I say we need to stop 100% sending money, and I think Congress should not send any money. If you want to send help, you send weapons. That's it.
Right.
No money.
Do
we should be keeping that money for ourselves.
I was going to say, do the people there feel the same way, or are there some that still feel that we should be sending some sort of monetary aid?
From everyone that I've talked to, they don't want money anymore. They just want weapons. They're like, why does America keep sending us money? We need weapons. I was like, this is my congressman. I don't have his telephone number, so I can't call him. I get that question a lot, especially from like people that hear me speaking English in the city center.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Right.
Usually it's the men. It's always the men, not the women. The men would always ask me, "Hey, why isn't America sending us more?" I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Let me call Biden right now and ask him." I was like, "I don't have Biden. Do you think that every American has Biden's telephone number?" I was like, "No, that's not how this works."
Tell him to call. Yeah.
That's a question I get a lot.
Give him a call.
So
right
usually
now,
my response back to that, whenever I hear men asking me, "Why isn't America giving us more?" I was like, "Well, why aren't you giving to your country? Why aren't you at the front defending your country, but you're asking for Americans to do it?" I was like, and usually that's where a lot of my arguments happen. So I usually just walk away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do they ever give you an answer of why they're not, you know, they're sitting in the restaurant or cafe instead of with those amazing men and soldiers, men and women fighting? Do they ever answer the question to you?
That's the thing, is I could never get a straight answer from them.
Answer.
I could never get. Yeah. And the thing is, like, they always tell me, "Well, I support my country." I was like, "So do you donate money?" "When I can." I was like, "So when you can, you know, a lot of us donate every single week that we get paid. We do more, but you don't donate." And I hear a lot of these guys talk about how they left the country to go on vacation, when men are not allowed to leave the country.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Yeah. If you know the right commander and you bribe him, you can leave the country. And that's what's happening.
Mm.
And I've never been able to get a straight answer. Yeah, I never get a straight answer. I was like, "Well, why aren't you doing more for that one?" "Oh, we don't need to. We have men at the front and women for us. We're here, you know, keep the businesses going." I was like, "That's not a good answer. Just tell me you're a coward. Tell me you're lazy.
Yeah.
Just tell me that. Right. I'll respect that more."
Or you're extremely afraid to go up on the front lines. Or, you know,
some guys have said that they don't want to die. Mm-hmm. Some guys have actually told me that they're not ready to die. I was like, "Well, if you don't join the fight and help win this war, it's going to get worse." Right now, you're lucky that we're not seeing anything in Lviv. But if it wasn't for the weapons, the money, and the brave men and women that are at the east, guess what?
Right.
Ukraine would have been lost a long time ago.
Yeah.
So
that's
the thing, is we don't get rockets and, you know, stuff like that here in Lviv at all. We do get the air alarm going off like twice a week, or actually five times a week. But it's mostly due to helicopters taking off in the Russian or the Belarus side. So whenever they see an airplane or a helicopter take off from a landing zone, the alarm goes off. So that's just no safety precautions. But I was like, you know, Lviv's the safest place to be right now.
Right, right.
Not much is happening. And that's the thing, is like, from what I've been told by Ukrainian people, even before the invasion happened, the war between Ukraine and Russia has been going on for 15 years, maybe less. Like I said, I'm not too sure about the full details. I think it was in 2011 or 2014 when all this was kicking off. And a lot of people were saying from the West, well, oh, not the West problem, even though it's the same country. That's the East problem. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. All the men and women from the East that are fighting, defending, is it still the problem? It's your problem. You're in a full invasion now. You should be picking up arms. Or not even that, at least train. At least know how to use an AK, how to do a tourniquet. Mm-hmm. A lot of people here don't know how to use a tourniquet.
Which is needed. Mm. Which is needed.
Exactly. Wow.
And that's the thing is like, one of my students told me, they told me, you know what? I wish we were like Israel. And I was like, why? It's because by mandatory, when you turn 18, you have to join the military for 2 years. At least everyone in Israel is military trained.
Yep.
Here in Ukraine, you know, you go if you want this and that. And that's what they told me, that they wish they had a law that at 18 you have to join the military for 2 years, at least get some kind of training in you. That would actually be pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Now that you mentioned about Israel, let's speak on October 7th. The whole world, I mean, this was an event like any event we have in the U.S. or anywhere on this planet, but it was based on people from many countries come to and have an enjoyable time, all about love and humanity. Of course, it was all set up, you know, they knew about that date, they knew about where the location was. To me, I have to, in my brain, and I did research and just learn about why all this was going on, why this is happening. My heart just like went down to my feet. I mean, it was just to the core, because I never in my whole lifetime, since I've been a human being, you know, here on this planet and being alive, the way all that happened, like what?
Yeah.
And going to all those people's homes, and that to me, that I just don't understand how a human being, no matter how the situation is, can be that barbaric. Even no matter, because I'm saying to myself, I just don't understand when something like this happens. Do you know good people in all the countries, both sides of the countries, there people going to die. On both sides, who doesn't have any part of what's going on. It's not, they're just living their lives. They're just surviving. And this is where it is now. Like, how many people have already died? And as we're doing this live interview, we have human beings underneath a tunnel who haven't seen light since October 7th or 8th. A woman who was pregnant had a baby in that tunnel last month.
Yeah, that was very disgusting, very bad, very unhumane.
Exactly.
Well, like, the whole situation with Israel is like, that's been going on for hundreds of years. That's, you know, like, how do I explain this? Like, just so you know, I'm half Mexican, half Palestinian. And, you know, I feel for the Palestinian people for what they've been through for many years due to Israel, due to the Jews mistreating them. I don't like what happened in October. Everything that's been going on as of right now from what Hamas is doing, that's just so wrong how they're trying to fight for Palestinians. Yes, I do want Palestinians to be free from Israel. Israel keeps Palestinian peoples in basically in like concentration camps. I don't know if you've ever seen what those, like what the West Bank looks like. I don't know if you saw those videos that I sent you, but you know, that was before October of how those people live. they basically live in a free range prison. If you saw those videos, and
yeah.
It's like, how do you want these people to act when they want freedom? And it's just bad how this whole situation happened. And it's just
right.
bad how Hamas is giving Palestinian people a bad name for the things that they're doing. There's a way of defending, there's a way of fighting, but this is just, it's very hard to explain because it's just so wrong how Hamas
right.
approached everything.
That's
yeah.
the thing. And it's barbaric to the point they're using
yeah.
their own people too. I mean, it's not like yeah. just the other side or this, that, and the other. And you have innocents who are dying, and where is the, well, how is this going to be solved? It's not. I don't see where the solving is going to occur. It's just going to be more
no.
people, innocent people dying and dying and dying and dying. And I'm just like, well, huh? All this that happened here, what's being solved? What?
And that's the
you
thing.
You just
it's
got
like,
people dying more.
This is a situation, and it's way different than what's happening here in Ukraine. Like the one in Ukraine,
yeah.
that's solvable. If people come to
right.
terms or if Putin gets killed, that's solvable.
Right.
But the Israel
right.
thing, that's one thing that the best way to put it is it's a lost hope. Because
yeah,
it's been going
be
on
soft.
For hundreds of years.
Yeah,
it,
yeah.
This is a lost hope. But the one in Ukraine, that's not a lost hope. It's
right.
just a matter
right.
of coming to terms or one gets defeated. But in Israel,
right.
that's going to be nonstop. Even if you go
right.
to different countries that have Jews and Palestinians, that fight's going to happen there as well. This is more of a lost yeah. cause now.
Because it has expanded
in
here in the USA as well at
yeah.
universities and harassments and things of that nature, like a wound that just reopened for, like, come on, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always
yeah.
just look at all people are people. We're all human beings. Well, you know, and just like you said, it's the love of animals because animals don't do none of that. They're not into all this craziness. You know what?
Yeah.
No,
no.
Yeah, but I will to kind of add context to what Caesar was saying, you know, between Hamas and Israel, just to give you a little bit of background, and it definitely goes to what he was saying. So I'm actually
right.
pulling this from Global Conflict Tracker because I was doing a little research, like, on the history of it because – you know, just wanted to research to, like, really see, like, what started it, what brought it about. And the little bit that I, you know, read here, I'll just give you just that one paragraph. So it's saying the Israeli-Palestinian conflict dates back to the end of the 19th century. In 1947,
mm-hmm.
the United Nations adopted the Resolution 181, known as the Partition Plan, which sought to divide the British Mandate of Palestine into Arab and Jewish states. On May 14, 1948, the State of Israel was created, sparking the first Arab-Israeli war. The war ended in 1949 with Israel's victory, but 750,000 Palestinians were displaced, and the territory mm-hmm. was divided into three parts, the State of Israel, the West Bank, which you just mentioned, Caesar, as well as the Gaza Strip, which the battle is taking place as we speak. So that kind of gives you a little bit of the background, going back to Caesar's point, just to let you know, like, you know, it does feel like something that is, there's just no end in sight. That's just a constant, constant conflict.
Battle.
Where,
yeah,
yeah. yeah, where it just has to be, it has to be, in my yeah. estimation, where either two people or two parties come together and just say, you know what, this is ridiculous.
Enough is enough.
Why are we,
and that's
why are we doing this? You know, yeah.
And that's the thing. Is the Israeli, I don't know who that high authority person guy's is name anymore, but he said he's welcome to give Palestinians their freedom, but he doesn't. He says with that freedom, they can't have a police system, they can't have a military system, they can't have, like, you know, stuff like that, like Israel would have.
Yeah.
So how are they free still?
Yeah.
If
yeah,
they can't
crazy.
Have their own government, if they can't have that, so what's free about that? You still want to control them.
Right.
So what's ever going to end about that? it's never going to end because it's been it's dated back for so long. There's no way of this coming down to something good anymore.
Right.
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 And we're at 2023. 2023, mm-hmm. and this is still occurring in a more even crazier situation. So 2024 continues.
And that's the thing is, that's pretty much how, like, we estimated what could happen with Ukraine is by the time maybe mid next year, there probably mm-hmm. won't be any more funding and help from America. What will Ukrainian people do? They're going to have to negotiate, or they're going to have to pull every man from every city to join the fight.
Right.
And the thing is, right now is a good time to start training these guys, training the women, mm-hmm. getting them ready just in case, because funding is going to be ending soon from America. Mm-hmm. And they just don't realize that.
Yeah.
Especially if we get a different leadership for going into the next presidential situation. We don't know how that's going to be, but I'm just saying, you already know.
And that's what I tell people. You have to prepare for it. And you know, so I bring up the thing of how Americans prepare to Ukrainian people, and they say, that's crazy. That's just weird. Why do Americans stock up and prepare? I was like, well, you got to understand. We have more disasters in America than you do here in Ukraine. We deal with tornadoes, hurricanes, mm-hmm. earthquakes, volcanoes, shootings mm-hmm. in the streets, mm-hmm. crime. We deal with a lot of this stuff. Power outages. Winter mm-hmm. comes. You sometimes lose water or electricity depending on where you live. Mm-hmm. We press ourselves to not deal with this type of stuff in the future. You're in a war zone now, guys. Your country's at war. Why haven't you prepped the essential things like battery packs, food, just in case you get abandoned, anything? Oh, we'll just wait for the government to tell us what to do. And you're talking about the same government that's corrupted. You're talking about the same government that you say doesn't give you the truth all the time, but you're waiting for them to tell you what to do? I was like, no, that's the stupidest thing to do.
My thing of it is, how would they get the message if there's no availability of a generator or Wi-Fi? How are they going to find out what the government is saying and to go here or go there? By word of
mouth?
That's
the thing,
I mean, how are they going to know?
So basically, like when we get the power plant hit here in Lviv about I forgot. It was back in October or November, one of those months. I don't remember where we had the outages. We lost electricity for a whole day. Mm-hmm. Restaurants couldn't open up. The buses couldn't run because they depend on electricity on the power lines, except the gas buses. Trains that depend on electricity on the railways, they couldn't function the whole day. So no electricity. So people were going to the markets, flashlights, to go shopping, but they couldn't accept credit card. You had to do all cash. You couldn't go to the ATM to get cash out because there's no electricity in the whole city.
Right.
People's telephones were dying because they didn't have battery packs. They didn't have stuff like that ready for them.
They weren't prepared.
People were storming the grocery stores to get as much food as they could. When a lot of the shelves were going empty, it's like, oh, now you wait for a disaster to happen in your home to go do things.
Yeah, to act.
Yeah.
And so to me, like, and this is like a horrible way to see it, but to me it was like, it's good that happened in Lviv. This was a wake-up call for them, but they still don't understand that.
And they think everything
like with me,
is just.
I have three battery packs that are always on charge. I have flashlights on charge. I have rechargeable batteries. I have two get the hell out of backpacks if I need to leave. I have everything ready. I have food, like dry goods, like pastas, rice, and stuff like that stocked up. Because what if it does get worse here? At least I can survive in my apartment for a month without worrying about anything. More than 50% of Ukrainian people are not prepared like that. They don't think like that. They depend on people helping them and information from the government. You should not do that. You should be ready. If you, especially if you have a family, think about them. And like I tell people, even if you do buy all this stuff, guess what? You can eat the food. Even if nothing's happening, at least you have a ration. Battery packs. It's good to have it. People travel. People do a lot of car driving. You go to the beach. You have a battery pack. If this whole war ends, guess what? You can sell a lot of this stuff back to people either way. Everything you buy is sellable or edible. What's the problem with stocking up?
Now, so, also,
yeah,
too,
that's my point of view.
Do you see next year sometime or the year after returning back so you can see your U.S. loved ones? I'll say it that way.
Well, that's the hard part for me because since, you know, I came here with a budget, with everything that I sold, that's all gone. So now this is why I have to get a job, and that's why I've been looking for, like, a really good paying job to raise money for me to be able to go back to the U.S. to visit. Right now, I'm barely surviving with what I get paid, and I have three jobs. And that's the thing, three jobs and still barely have enough to just buy groceries for the month. You know, that's not a good way to live, but I'm not helpless. I'm not suffering. I'm just suffering where I can't save money to go back to the U.S. So that's the problem. If I wanted to go back to the U.S., I can make an emergency call, but guess what? I would have to find a way to bring my dog with me, have to find a way to bring all my stuff that I have here, or I would have to leave everything behind and just take what I can carry. I could probably make that call. But going back to the U.S., to live back in the U.S., I have to start from the bottom up again. Remember, I sold everything, my furniture, TVs, kitchenware, everything's gone. So basically, I have to go back, get a job, live with my mom until I can get back on my feet, get an apartment, buy furniture. You're looking at over $20,000 just for me to get back on my feet. Compared to here, I already have a home. I have furniture. I have stuff like that. But I would love to have a good paying job where I can raise money so I can just travel. Like, hey, I'm going to come visit you guys. But I don't have that. So, yeah, that's the thing. I do want to go back to the U.S. to see my family again. It's just hard right now with the kind of salary I make.
And
so,
I know
that's where I stand on that issue.
And I know when you do, you're going to bring Poopsie with you, your little doggy.
Oh, yeah.
So,
she's that same behind.
You ain't keeping like, hey, if I got to stay, if Poopy's got to stay, I ain't going back to the U.S. Forget all y'all. I love y'all, but my Poop, you know, I hear you.
I'm kind of curious, Caesar, outside of, you know, outside of family, what is the one thing that you miss about home?
Whew, good question.
The delicious food. The delicious food.
That sounds about right.
That's what I miss is going to HEB, like my HEB is a market in the U.S. or in Texas only, but I miss going to HEB, walking down their spice aisles, all their meat markets. Just miss all that. Miss going to Whole Foods to see what you can find from different countries. You can't find that here in Ukraine. And that's the thing is, like, a lot of the food that I'm used to eating doesn't exist here. So, like, luckily my mom ships me packages with spices and stuff that I can't find here. She ships me packages every once in a while, which they are pretty expensive to ship, but she does it. Like my last package, she shipped me 4 bottles of ranch dressing, which I love ranch dressing, but you can't find it here. She shipped me bottles of Frank's Red Hot Sauce. You can't find that here. Just stuff like that. Stuff to make tortillas. You can't find any of that here. So she shipped me all that stuff. Like that little masa to make tamales. That does not exist here. You cannot find any of that stuff here. You can't even have it shipped from a different country through regular mail. So someone has to ship that to you. So, and the funny thing is, just yesterday, with all the stuff that my mom sent me, I made tamales.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was happy about eating something that I wanted so bad. But, yeah, that stuff doesn't exist here. The corn husk, the masa, that doesn't exist here. So that's why I was like, shoot, send that to me. If I can have some American food. But, yeah, that's what I miss, American food.
Was there American fast food restaurants before February or a little after February of last year that they had McDonald's and things over there?
Well, McDonald's shut down for a little bit. They shut down for almost 5 months when the whole invasion happened. KFC and Domino's stayed open.
Oh, okay.
But so those are the only Kentucky three fried, fast food American restaurants here.
So Kentucky Fried Chicken and Domino's Pizza in Ukraine. I just had Kentucky Fried Chicken a few days ago. Awesome. Okay.
What they need was a Taco Bell here.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, they need a Taco Bell here. That's what they need.
Oh,
I would agree with that.
Taco Bell.
I would agree with that.
Taco Bell. Now, did you say that McDonald's reopened over there? Or it didn't reopen?
McDonald's was the only American restaurant that shut down when the whole invasion happened. And then after that, like if you walk around the city center, you just see all the McDonald's stores just close and just walk by them while KFC and Domino's was still open. And they finally opened up all the McDonald's in Ukraine. It took little by little because they're doing one building at a time in every city. And now McDonald's is like very popular again. Every McDonald's you go to in the city center here is always crowded.
Okay.
And McDonald's is actually like a fancy food for them here. McDonald's is very expensive here. I told people, like, you understand, McDonald's is for poor people in America. It's good, but it's made for poor people.
It really
is. McDonald's here in Ukraine is made for, like, the middle-class people.
Very expensive.
Wow.
That's how it is in Japan. In Japan, McDonald's is very expensive. It's not like America, where, you know, you can get a $5 or $2.50 special, all that. It's very expensive in Japan as well. But in
I compare, I tell people, this is how you compare people's salary here in Ukraine compared to people's in America. So a carton of eggs costs here for 10 eggs only, you're looking at maybe 56 Ukrainian dollars. Now, the average employee that works in a restaurant usually makes 50 to 100 Ukrainian dollars an hour. So 1 hour, someone can buy 10 eggs only. Or if they're making 100, they can buy two cartons of eggs, which is 20 eggs. In America, the pay rates for a traditional line cook is usually from $15 to $25, depending on where they work. For a dozen eggs in the U.S., you're looking at maybe $2, $3. So that's how I compare the pay rates here is, everything's expensive when you're making that kind of money. cheeseburger from McDonald's is 168 to 250 Ukrainian dollars. That's why it's expensive. Because the kids don't make that kind of money. So when they do go to McDonald's, they go once or twice a month, and they go, you know, ravish through all of that. People say Americans are rich. I was like, no. We're not rich. We just have a higher pay rate because we have money that we circulate in the U.S. that we have that kind of opportunity. Here, you don't really have money circulating properly here. Food is very expensive here in Ukraine. And that's the thing. It's like since the invasion to now, prices have gone up big time on food here in Ukraine.
I know. And that's here, you know, by history in America, war and things like that, the gas goes up, the food goes up. So I noticed that happens in every country when it comes to war.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's transportation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, transportation is always going to be cost, you know. So, you know, like you were saying, with gas going up, you know, that means, oh, well, if we got to put more gas and to transport all these goods and services, then naturally that means we have to put more tax on the food. So that's usually how it goes. But I'm going to definitely go back to the point you was mentioned, just to, again, just to add more context to it, because you were saying, you said 250 Ukrainian dollars roughly, between 158 to about 250, you said for a cheeseburger?
Yeah.
For a cheeseburger? So I did a little conversion, and, you know, for anybody's wondering, like, how much that would be in American dollars? So conversion rate, it looks to be close to $7 for a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
So,
and that's just for the cheeseburger.
For every Ukrainian dollar, so basically for every American dollar, the exchange rate here in Ukraine is 36 to 37 Ukrainian dollars.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The euro is stronger than the American dollar right now. It's
it is.
40. It's 1 euro for 40 Ukrainian dollars.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. When I first got here to Ukraine, the American dollar was going for 41. One U.S. dollar was 41 Ukrainian dollars, but it went down to 36 to 37 now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is, that's what brings up the whole point. Like, so these are the things that I've seen that Ukraine's very popular for, is alcohol and cigarettes.
Yeah.
And the reason I say alcohol is if I walk out of my apartment door right now, the front door, if I turn to the right, within 2 minutes, there's a liquor store. If I turn left, which is another 3 minutes to the market, there's a liquor store. If I go down 5 minute walk down, there's a liquor store. And across the street, there's a giant, it's like a Specs, but it's a giant liquor store that's called Mad Dog. But it's the same size as Specs. I could see it from my front door. So I have more than 5 beer stores, liquor stores, within 5 minute walk from me.
Right.
You go to the city center, you walk around the city center, you pass one liquor store, guess what? 3 doors down, there's another one next door. Another 3 doors down, there's another one next door. And the markets, let's say a grocery store, they sell liquor too.
So is it because lots of people just love to drink alcohol? Is that mainly what it is?
alcohol
and smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol.
Well,
like Germany, they're known for the beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You also, like with cigarettes, you also see small kiosks in the streets that just sell cigarettes and gum and stuff like that, little kiosks. It's just cigarettes.
Right.
So, yeah.
Lots of drinkers.
This is what I told a couple of Ukrainian people. I was like, you know, the reason why, yes, alcoholism does exist in America, but it's not as wide as it is here, because we offer rehab programs. We offer stuff like that. It's either free or you can get some kind of funding or you pay for it yourself. But we offer affordable to expensive rehab programs. Rehab here in Ukraine is very, very expensive. Only the rich can afford it. So this is why they have an alcohol problem. So I can't afford rehab. What should I do? I'll just drink to forget about all this.
Yeah, coping. Coping.
I see. And the thing is that we're very strict about our alcohol laws in America, where a bartender can cut you off. That doesn't exist here.
Yep.
They'll keep serving someone until they completely fall on the ground.
Until they pick
but they won't cut them off.
Wow.
Yeah. People in the streets, they walk around drunk and they're falling. Their friends are carrying them, walking by police. Police do nothing. Not like in America. They can easily arrest you or give you a ticket for public intoxication. That does not exist here either. The drinking age is 18 here. So, of course, you know, they're going to get drunk. But, yeah.
Yep.
And on top of that, they sell liquor on Sundays too. So it's never closed. Mm. Liquor is able. And the thing
seven
is, like,
days.
By law, they're supposed to stop selling alcohol, like the stores, at 10 o'clock. That's a bullshit lie. Because I can still buy beer all the way till 11:55 before curfew. So, like, nobody obeys the laws here as much as that. So usually if you do go past 10 o'clock to go to get some beer, there's always one guy that works at the market just standing outside looking to see if police are going to walk by or anything like that while they're letting people in to go buy their beer. But, yeah, they don't obey that. You can see – and the crazy thing is, in the city center, I always see guys taking a piss in the streets in front of everybody because they couldn't wait to go to the toilet. Police walk by, they do nothing.
That's crazy.
So it's like
– littering.
So that's normal here.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's why – and I think this is why they have really strict gun laws. Like I said, this is just a theory. If you can't control the people that are drinking a lot, at least control the guns. So this is why it's very difficult to get a firearm here in Ukraine. You have to go through a doctor check. The doctor's going to check you physically and see how you are mentally, and then you do the police background check. And when you go through all that, if they say you're good to go, you can purchase a firearm. Compared to America, where you just do one quick background check and you get it. But
yeah,
no, you do
the
psych.
Yeah, we've been pushing that, and you know, you get a whole lot of backlash on that because the same thing we just heard is like the background check, a mental check, and a physical check. See, that's already you already pretty much eliminated about three quarters, close to it, of people that can probably own a weapon right then. You know, people are gonna be mad at that. So yeah, that Yeah,
which I do like that their gun laws are secure because we shouldn't be giving guns to these kind of people that are just being trash drunk and they're not mentally stable. So I do agree with that. But then again, you have to blame the government for allowing them to drink like that without punishment.
That's
the government's fault either way.
It's got to be consequences. You're right.
Yeah, so you can't just choose one thing. And that's the thing, it's like people always talk about, you can just buy whatever you want. You can go, like I said, at the markets, you can find bottles of Jameson, any kind of liquor you're looking for, it's right there on the cabinet that you can just grab. grocery stores, all that. They're licensed to do that. You have people selling cigarettes on the streets. If you just want one cigarette, you just got to go to the little old lady and say, I just want one cigarette. She'll sell you a cigarette. But, yeah, that's all possible. Like, so that's why I tell people this reminds me of Mexico because that's how they are in Mexico as well.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. But, yeah, like those kind of laws, this is why I see why they don't give guns out to just anybody here because look how unstable the drinking problem is here.
Yeah.
That's a good law right there.
So that's one good thing that they're doing.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. That's a good one there. Definitely.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And a lot of other countries are that way, too, in certain countries that I respect because it's needed that way. And that's why you hear less problems. There still are problems, but a little less compared to the craziness you hear here on a daily, weekly basis.
Working in kitchens all my life, I know about sanitation, I know about stuff like that, what you're supposed to do at a restaurant when you're working in a kitchen, I know about stuff like that, what you're supposed to do at a market, the sanitation, stuff like that. That doesn't really exist here either. Does not. You could just see a group of guys going outside like that cook food, smoke a cigarette, go back inside and wash their hands real quick with no soap. They just rinse their hands off and they start making your food. That happens a lot.
Without gloves, without any gloves on or anything.
And sometimes I do see them with gloves on, but they wash the gloves off too. They go wash their hands while wearing the gloves. I was like, you know, you're not doing much to do that. In the U.S., a lot of in the U.S., all these restaurants would have been shut down a long time ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do love that the restaurants are pet friendly, so you can bring your dog into a restaurant with no issue. But also, too, like, you know, if your dog's shaking around, that fur is going into people's food, too. So I understand why we have those kind of laws in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there. And so this is why I told a lot of the Ukrainian people, like, this is why a lot of foreigners get sick when they come to countries like this, is because of all the germs, of all the stuff. We basically live in bleach in America. Here, they don't really like using bleach to clean their houses or whatever. Me, I do. I got to go find my bleach.
Right.
But, yeah,
right.
That doesn't really exist. They use regular, like I said, that's a whole different situation.
Hey, Caesar, I know we have just a few minutes left. If I could give you a crystal ball and you can look and make your prediction as to the situation that Ukraine will be in 2024, where do you see it as it stands right now?
Good question. I have two theories. Both of them are not good. First one, I think by mid next year, there's going to be some kind of negotiation between Putin and Zelensky on happening. If funding ends for Ukraine, I see them negotiating some kind of treaty. If aid is still going to Ukraine, this is my second theory, is they're going to start doing the draft, which is going to affect a lot of people. It's going to cause more chaos. I don't see the war ending anytime soon next year at all, unless funding ends from the U.S. If funding ends, they're going to have to start doing negotiations. They're going to have to start stepping up their game and start doing things on their own instead of asking for handouts all the time. But my point of view for all of that is this is going to be rough to say, but I really don't see Ukraine winning next year if they don't get their act together.
Right.
I do see them being successful and winning if they started putting harsher laws that men and women have to start learning or training or start doing the draft. I do see them winning. But if they keep it up the same way as it is right now, I don't see them winning. That's my point of view. Like I said, I might be wrong on a lot of this stuff, but it's just what I think.
Right. Well, you're on the ground, so definitely you have your ear to the ground and you see what's going on. And definitely wish you the best there. And we hope that there is a time where what you're doing comes to an end and you can come home.
Definitely.
And in the meantime, we can't thank you enough for giving us insight tonight on what is going on. Definitely, I hope, opens a lot of people's eyes and ears. And this world in which a lot of stuff's going on and stuff gets pushed to the back burner. But I definitely learned a lot more tonight. And I hope that you continue to be careful over there. And we can't wait to touch base with you again. To hear about what's going on, and hopefully it is peace and more love.
Yeah, they deserve peace too. So that's what I want this to end quick, and I want peace for everybody, especially for Ukrainian people. I want them to have peace. I want them to be independent, but they have to get their act together too.
Thank
you so much for joining us this morning.
I know.
You got up early for this
one. Yes, I thank you so much for, you know, staying up with us because I know, you know, our time here, as you know, is totally different where you are right now, and you could be resting and sleeping right now. So,
definitely get some rest after this.
Such a special guest, definitely. And you know, I'll be reaching you through the week and through the month and before the year is out, because you know it's just a few more weeks before going into the new year as well. So definitely,
Christmas and New Year. So yeah.
So I'll send you stuff and reach out to you as always. So anything do you want the listeners to know as far as any of your social pages, email, any still any foundation funds that you need, please let us know. Could you mention that at this time so the listeners can actually know where to actually support what you're doing as far as your social pages, emails, or website or anything that you want them to know? Can you mention that to us now?
I do want to say, yes, I know I've been a little lazy on, like, my fundraiser and all of that type of stuff, but now that winter's going on and a lot of these animal shelters need help, especially the ones here that are rescuing animals from the east, they can use a lot of help. A lot of their funding is cut to the bare minimum, where sometimes a lot of these people have to go out of their pockets to just buy enough food where they don't even eat themselves just to take care of the dogs. They need as much help as possible, which I'm trying to organize something for them, which I'll be doing in the next week or so, getting all that prepared, hoping to get that done by the end of the week. But, yeah, like I said, I don't want funding to end. I just want funding to end for the government.
Right.
Weapons keep sending that up.
Well, I will say to you, any update info that you need to submit to me, do that, and I can put that up on my social pages or create a banner as I do for my Instagram so I can let the people know where to go and how to contact or any foundation that needs to be with you, definitely with you, to know the information of where they have to send funds and things of that nature, you know.
Okay. Yeah, and like I always tell people, any donations that I get, I do keep records of everything. So I want people to know that 100% is going straight to what needs to be done. I don't like to do like a lot of organizations here where I need to pay. Well, this is why I got three jobs, to pay for my own bills, not to take advantage of the fundraisers, which I see a lot happening here. But,
All right.
I like to keep everyone an audit paper, if you call it. But, yeah. I think keep funding to help rescue the animals. I don't want to be selfish and say the civilians don't really need much help, but they have more than enough. The grocery stores are full. Volunteer groups are still helping out the people to evac and all that. Countries are helping out. But we need to focus more on the animals than we do on people. Especially during the time when it's winter, when a lot of animals don't even have shelter.
Yeah, and this reason is cool. Yes, definitely. Well, we're going to have you back again for 2020, you know that, and keep us updated on what's going on. And you are such an amazing guest, an amazing person to still be somewhere where you don't really have to be there, and you're there helping them.
Yeah.
So that's a blessing, truly a blessing. And we love you. You're so amazing. So definitely – I just say to everyone, you know, going into the new year, always spread love, be positive. As you know, when you love and support and bless the world, you always win at the end. You always win at the end.
Yes.
That's the way it goes.
There will be good things happening for Ukraine. We just all have to pull together and just focus on what's important.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that note, you know, everybody's going to be getting ready for my celebrity birthday bash in February. So all that information will be up in January in reference to a turn up time for partying for February and March. And Caesar is invited as well, you know. So
I'll be there in spirits.
Right. Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly. It's all going to be online anyway, so, you know.
Oh, okay, I'll be there.
I'll keep you updated with everything on that. Yeah, so, definitely. So on that note, yes, go ahead, I'm sorry. We're about to end our
I appreciate y'all bringing me back on to the show. It was fun. If people... I don't know if you do this. If people want to ask me questions, they're welcome to by email or anything like that. I'm willing to answer any questions that they have in mind if they want to do stuff like that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, anything you need for us to support, please send that information over, and we'll put it up on our social pages as well of what's needed. All right. And I will say thank all my fans, all of our listeners globally for listening in tonight and throughout all the shows I've done through this year. My PLM family, I love y'all. And definitely, definitely we have some great things just coming up towards next year for 2024. We're just going to always keep the world smiling and happy. And just, I love when people smile, no matter how the craziness is going on in the world, you still have to smile and enjoy life. You have to do that. Don't let the badness control your mindset. Definitely not, because then the badness wins. You always want to have a great time in life, definitely. So, all right, so that's all I have to say. Everybody knows my info. Y'all know where to find me. And I would just say, everyone be safe, others, because that's where your blessings come. And like I say, help the animals, pets, and the people who really need you. Because lots of people need you, and they might not say they need you. Just see if they're okay. That's all you need to do.
Yeah.
So I love y'all.
That is true.
Let's go on and continue on. And anything my radio host needs to say at this moment before we end the show, we can ride it on out.
Oh, happy holidays and happy Hanukkah.
Right. I guess so. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's it. All right, my friend. Great. Thank you all. Good to be back.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. And, of course.
Thank you for everything.
All right. Yeah, there it is. There it is. And, of course, you know how we always have to end the show on a definitely a high note, and especially with a special song that's been chosen for tonight. So we're going to end with a very festive song that was first released on November 27th, 1967, by Motown from his 8th studio album of the same name, produced by Henry Crosby. It marks this artist's first Christmas album. And that song is Someday at Christmas by Stevie Wonder. And on that note, on behalf of all of us here at the PLM, Spontaneous Radio Online, definitely be safe, happy holidays, continue to love each other, and just do good for the next person. And if it ain't the next person, for the next animal.
Next That's right. Spontaneous loves you.
Y'all do. Y'all be good out there. Peace.
Yeah. Y'all have a good one. Take care.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December, our hearts will see a world where men are free. Someday at Christmas, there'll be no war, when we have learned what Christmas is for, when we have found what life's really worth, then children, no empty hands, one happy moment.